This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Turkey Division here at Car Talk Plaza.
Quite appropriately, I might add.
Well, every year around Thanksgiving time, we give out a turkey award for the person we deem to be the biggest turkey of the year. How many years in a row did you get it?
I was all alone for about 12 years.
Now, in years past, it's gone to such luminaries as Roger Smith. Actually, he swept it from 83 to 89 for single-handedly dropping GM's market share like 15 points over that period of time.
Yeah. And for which he's only getting like $10 million a year for a retirement.
Retirement severance. Or whatever. Our buddy Lee Iacocca picked up a turkey a few years back for having an entire car company that only sold one car. Well disguised, but they still had only one car.
Right.
And this year, we had a tough choice to make. Iacocca was up for it again after attempting a hostile takeover of his old company, not realizing that the doorknob had hit him pretty hard in the butt the first time he left. And the woman who tried to arrest Dougie for drinking a cup of Starbucks on the Washington, D.C. Metro got a couple of votes.
No, I was not in favor of her at all.
For not managing to apprehend him. But this year's winner, this year's Car Talk Turkey, is none other than Massachusetts' own illustrious governor, William Weld. Otherwise a pretty decent guy, and by all accounts, he lives here in our fair city, as a matter of fact. But he recently came up with a cost-cutting plan that includes, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Abolishing the registry of motor vehicles and giving lifetime driver's licenses.
I mean, what is he thinking? You know why? He doesn't drive. He doesn't realize how many people are out there on the road who shouldn't be out there on the road. And he gets his limo to carry him back and forth to, where is he? The governor? So he goes to the state house every day from his beautiful house in beautiful Harvard Square. And he thinks it's, oh, you give people a lifetime license? I mean, people shouldn't have a license for even 6 weeks. Lifetime, so if your leg falls off or you go blind, keep driving, says Bill. I hope they drive by your house, Bill. I mean, where is his brain?
Well, if there were one argument against his recommendation, there is one country that I know of that does give lifetime. One cogent argument, I meant.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't
hear this. Grant. Yeah.
There's one country that I know of that gives lifetime licenses. And if they do it, it means that you shouldn't. And that country is France.
Yeah.
Right?
You figure it out, Bill. You figure it out. Do I get to read a letter here?
Oh, sure. Right. Why not?
Dear Click and Clack, although I should be grading my art history exams... Oh, another art history.
Hey,
they're malcontent.
They're people too, you know.
I'm instead writing to ask respectively that you cease your relentless bashing.
Oh. Respectively or respectfully?
Respectfully.
Oh,
what
okay.
did I say?
Respectively, but that's all right. We can do it respectively too.
That you cease your relentless bashing of art history and art historians. As I was listening to you today while driving home after grocery shopping, I heard your comment to Sally in Chapel Hill. This must have been months ago. Letter is dated October. Oh, that's not too long ago. In which you sneered at both art history and library science.
93, October 93.
93. This was mild, however, compared to your tirade a few months ago when the caller was a young woman getting a master's degree in art history. Yeah, I admit to all of this. My intent is not only to chastise you for your unkind attitude, as many of my colleagues in the profession must already have done. Yes, they have. But also to enlighten you about the usefulness of studying the history of art. Now, can you believe...
I'm ready.
Can you believe this guy's going
to
do this?
I am prepared to be enlightened.
Billy Fisher, this is, of Kalamazoo College in where? Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Yes.
Billy. Now, that could be male or female, couldn't it? Not 15 minutes before your program today, I had purchased a pomegranate. This is going to be weak. To show my students at Kalamazoo College who had taken an exam on Friday... in which they had to write about a painting by Fra Filippo Lippi. Remember him? It shows a Madonna and child holding what? A pomegranate.
Yes.
When I was picking out the pomegranate at the store, a nice retired couple asked me what in the world that was, so I told them. And knowing they would surely be interested, I explained its symbolism at some length. Pluto, or Hades, god of the underworld, had abducted Persephone. Remember her?
Yes.
Goddess of spring.
I dated her in high school.
Goddess of spring to be his bride. But she was miserable down below, not in a physical sense, but in a Hades sense. And the earth grew barren because her mother, Demeter. The goddess of what? Corn.
Wheat. Oh, corn. Corn?
I mean, there was no shortage of goddesses.
Oh, yeah.
Corn.
Well, they ran out after a while.
I mean, is there a goddess of dodge darts? Her mother was grieving. Persephone was finally allowed to come back to the earth, but because she had eaten some pomegranate seeds while in the underworld, she had to return there for a few months each year, which is why we have fall and winter.
Oh, that's not the version I heard.
Therefore, the pomegranate became a symbol of resurrection to the church, and it has other visual meanings as well. The many seeds inside stand for the many souls within the church. The red juice is like the wine of the Mass, and so on. This is really good. I submit to you that this example shows the fascinating trivia known to people who study, what?
Art history.
Finally, to reply to your earlier disparaging comment that studying art history will never get anyone a job, I'm sure that many of my students have. And when I think of one, I'll send it to you. Billy Fisher, Kalamazoo College, Well, I mean, I thought I should at least air the opposing view.
Exactly.
So those of you who didn't know the history of the pomegranate now know it.
Art I want to know how soon after he launched into his explanation did those two people nod off?
I like the way he said, well, I told them, knowing that they would surely be interested, I explained its symbolism at some length. Can you just imagine bumping into this guy in the supermarket? Hey, what the hell is that in your shopping cart? Oh, let me explain to you about Demeter and Persephone. Yeah, sure, I get lost.
If you want to call us about your car, our number is 1-800-332-9287. And art history majors are welcome. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Romeo.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou?
Wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Art thou in Albuquerque.
Albuquerque.
Yeah, New Mexico.
Yeah. So what's up?
Not much. I have a question about my car.
Wait. Is your name really Romeo?
Yeah, sure.
No kidding.
Are you of Italian extraction or Spanish?
I'm Spanish.
Spanish.
Really?
Actually, I'm Mexican. I can't say I'm Spanish.
And how do they put it's not pronounced Romeo.
Romeo.
Romeo. Yeah, it's, Romeo.
It's pronounced Romeo?
Uh-huh.
In Spanish? Because in Italian, it's Romeo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay, like sure. Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
That's a great name. It's not very common. Is it common in Mexico?
No, not really. It's I don't know.
Do you have a nickname?
Do I have a nickname?
Yeah.
No, just call me Romeo.
Really? That's interesting. That's nice. That's nice. It's like refreshing to find someone whose name is used in its entirety.
Yeah. Well, some names don't lend themselves to nicknames at all, like Nick.
Nick.
What are you going to call Nick? Or you can say Nick without the K.
Right.
Well, yeah. I tell you what, try growing up with a name like Romeo, though.
Yeah, no, no thanks.
like the boy named Sue, you know?
Yeah, how many fights did you have?
Well, I got beat up a lot as a kid, but it makes it tough.
Makes it tough.
All right, so what's up, Romeo?
Well, I have a 66 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme. Yeah. And, well, you know, right now it's running on, instead of two, it's only running on one, what we call down here, huevo. Now, see, me and my friend, we had it parked and we were, you know, tinkering around with it, trying to just fix up a couple of the loose ends. And we took it out and we were horse beating it. And, you know, we peeled out a couple of times. Like, for one time, we peeled out for like two blocks. And then one time, we peeled out through an intersection, and then we pull it into my garage again. We like just back it up all casually, and it starts clicking like we threw a rod or something. And
you were really beating this thing.
The
huh?
engine oh, starts yeah. clicking.
Yeah, it's a muscle car, you know. What can
sure.
you do?
Not, it sounds like an anemic car right now.
Well, yeah. So it started clicking, and we kind of looked at each other and gave a really distressed look, you know, because we said, "Oh man, that's going to cost
man,
a lot of money."
Oh man, what did we do now?
Right. And so we backed it up, and you know, we parked it for a while, and said, "Well, we'll get to that when we have time." And when we started it up again the next time, it started fine. There was no clicking, and but ever since then, you know, the thrill's not there. It's not even worth peeling out anymore. It's like, man, well,
why? Because you're afraid you're going to repeat this.
Well, not really.
No,
it
doesn't have any guts anymore.
Exactly. It's just the thrill is gone.
Yeah. And does it run lousy at idle as well?
Actually, it idles pretty well. It sounds really good.
But it doesn't have any power.
No power. And someone told me that it might be a lifter because, like, I guess it was parked for a while. But then someone else told me it could be the timing belt. Now, I'm not really sure because I don't know, you know.
Well, it doesn't have a belt. It has
a
chain.
And I like the timing chain.
There you
theory.
Go.
Well, I don't particularly. Usually, once the timing chain begins to go, it's a rapid slide downhill. And in other words, if you've jumped that chain one notch, it's probably going to jump two or three or four notches within a few hours of running.
Oh, but well, it depends on how you drive, though.
Take it out and drive the hell out of it again. I mean, if the timing chain is gone.
If you did jump the chain, it means it's loose enough to jump. And if you do what you were doing, whatever the hell you were doing, you and your buddy there, Juliet.
Right. I know what they were doing. They were repaving the roads in Albuquerque with rubber.
And gasoline coming out the tailpipe. And if that's the case, this thing will jump about four more teeth.
And stop
and
running.
It won't start.
Well, if you don't want to do that, here's what you do. Do you have a timing light?
You sure do.
Put the timing light on.
Does he have a timing light?
And see if the ignition timing is still right on. If it is, then you didn't jump the chain.
Okay.
Okay. But you could have collapsed the lifter.
Oh man.
But if you did, you'd probably still be hearing the noise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if the noise is completely gone, it runs very smoothly at idle.
I suspect it's something a little less severe.
Oh, that's good.
And I'm going to recommend that you have. To do something here, you have to take the spark plugs out, and you're going to find that one of them is fouled.
You
think it's running on 8 cylinders, but it isn't.
Uh-huh.
You say it runs pretty well at idle, but it doesn't run perfectly, does it?
No, not really.
Yeah, not really.
It kind of, I guess, drags. Is that the word when you give it a little gas?
Well, no. When you is it automatic?
Yeah, sure.
When you put it in drive, is there a little shake to the engine?
A little bit, but not much.
Not much, just enough to let you know that you're running on 7 cylinders instead of 8.
Yeah, and probably. Yeah.
And I think that would account for everything.
That would account for the
small loss of power.
Uh huh.
And would account for the fact that it runs rough.
Yeah.
Which are the only two things which constitute everything.
I mean, when you try to really accelerate hard, if you have ever tried that since this happened, does the whole engine shake?
No, I bet it pops back through the carburetor. If you really stomp on it.
Sure.
Poof, poof. Yes?
I guess it runs all right. It just takes a while to get up there, you know, and the speed.
It's the timing chain then.
You think so?
I think it's the timing chain.
Well, it could be. Put the timing
Check
light
the
on
timing.
It. Then if that's the timing's all right, pull the plugs out. You'll find a couple of them fouled.
If you're lucky.
Bet you they've never been changed. I haven't changed them since I got them. So.
And you got the car when you were in high school, right?
Yeah, it's just about. It's a pretty old car.
Good luck.
All right, thanks a lot. You guys really do good work.
Check the timing and check the spark plugs.
Okay, have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, the Puzzler Answer and more calls are coming up right after this.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History, from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, executive producer of Insecure, Black Twitter, A People's History, tells the story of how black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History, is now streaming on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Discover. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Okay, here are your hints to help you remember last week's puzzler. It was a racing story of two Italian legends.
I remember it! Scapolini! Schipolini!
There you go.
Scipolone!
I stole this from somebody named Gene Miro, I think.
Yeah.
I've, of course, applied the requisite car talk touch of obfuscation, reformation, and lying when necessary.
Yeah, okay.
The legendary Grand Prix race car driver, Neil the Real Deal Scalapini.
That's him, I remember.
Had been facing the same nightmare race after
race.
Do
all Italians have to have nicknames?
Yeah, like Cadillac Frank Salemi and all the guys, yeah.
Frank the Rifleman and all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You have to have a nickname. Okay. What's your nickname?
Not repeatable.
Raymond the Chuchman.
His crew would work night and day fine-tuning his sleek black Mozzarella GT race car, but no amount of mechanical skill or driving courage could make the nightmare go away. Anyway, in every race, he would find himself just a few inches behind the car of his arch-nemesis, Cristoforo Crusty Crostini, unable to slip by him. One day, as Neil, the real deal, Scalapini, was chasing Crusty on the 50th lap, he was astonished to find himself pulling even with his rival's sinister V13 Roadster. Mamma mia, he murmured to himself, his heart in his throat. A few seconds later, Crostini was in his rearview mirror. He'd passed him.
Wow.
At that moment, some instinct forced him to look down. Oh, shucks, he said.
Right, he sure did. Oh, shucks.
As he realized the need for an immediate pit stop.
Haircut?
No.
No.
Maybe.
Oh.
It had nothing to do with needing a haircut.
No.
What he had seen at that moment caused him to pull into the pit and, of course, lose the race. So after this moment of jubilation,
yeah,
it was dashed when he looked down. And what did he see when he looked down?
The answer.
What he noticed when he looked down and what he looked down to were the gauges. He noticed he had no oil pressure.
Yeah.
And the fact that he had lost his oil somehow accounted for the sudden burst of power because...
Didn't have all that oil to lug around anymore.
The engine didn't have to push that oil by making the pump work. The pump was still working, but it was not pumping oil. And for those few seconds that he sped by Crusty Crostini, mm-hmm, he had more power because... He had lost his oil, yeah, and didn't have to expend any of the engine's energy pumping the oil around, but he still had enough to keep the bearings from melting and the pistons from welding themselves to the cylinder walls.
Maybe.
But he realized it was only a matter of seconds,
yep,
before destruction set in, and that's why he pulled in for a pit stop. Anyway, do we have a winner?
Yes. The winner this week is Elizabeth Campbell from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And for knowing why Neil the Real Deal Scalapini lost to Cristoforo Crusty Crostini and having a correct answer selected at random, Elizabeth Campbell from Chattanooga, Tennessee, you will win a copy of our brand new CD, compact disc, that stands for.
Yes.
The Best of Car Talk.
Revisited.
The Best of Car Talk features several famous incidents in car talk history, including the foreign accent syndrome, Darlene and the Case of the Two Boyfriends, and the Burping Gas Tank, as well as many, many others. So all those, Elizabeth, will be yours for being our puzzler winner this week. Congratulations to you.
By the way, if you didn't win the puzzler and your station isn't offering the Best of Car Talk as a way to get you to fork over a pledge, you can always get a copy by calling our Shameless Commerce Division. The number there is 303-595-5905. And anyway, we have another new quasi-automotive puzzler coming up during the second half of the show today. So stay tuned for that. By the way, when I start reusing puzzlers, you know,
yeah,
will I have to say we have another vintage puzzler?
No, I think it's encore.
Encore.
Yeah, that's
anyway,
the term.
Hello. Oh, 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
My name's Jenny Donaldson. I'm calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Did you say Jenny or Ginny?
Jenny, Virginia.
Ginny.
Jenny.
From Nashville.
Yeah. You know, my father's a MIT alumni.
He is.
In atomics.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't... So I'm not smart enough to figure out this problem I'm presenting to you guys.
When did your father graduate from the Fine Institute?
Probably 58. 57.
58. That's when I graduated.
Oh, well, yeah? Tommy was class of 57, 58, 59.
No, that was Vito. It was 56, 57, and 58.
Someplace in there.
Yeah. We probably bumped into each other in the great halls.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah, pool halls, which are in the basement.
Excellent.
So, what's up, Ginny?
Well, you know, I've got this green car, and my roommate has some horses, and I go out in the pasture with my car to get the horses, like everybody else does, but they liked my car, and they ate it. $2,700 worth of damage, and they wouldn't eat anybody else's car.
What?
Did they eat the seats?
They had their mouth on the stick shift. They got my purse out. They ate the—I had to replace the hood because they ate the paint off the hood, the rearview mirrors, the bumpers, the molding, the
what?
Roof of the car.
Horses?
It had under 3,000 miles on it when this happened.
Horses eat mirrors?
They what?
I didn't know horses ate mirrors.
They ate the plastic molding around the mirrors.
Boy, these must have been some hungry horses.
Six
I mean, don't they feed them? What the hell do you expect if you don't feed them?
Eat good.
But, I mean, how long did it take them to do this?
About a half an hour.
Where were you?
I was riding.
Ah.
And my friend came up and she said, Jenny, you better come down to the pasture because the horses
come
are
quick.
Yeah, they're down there. And they had six of them were around it devouring it. I mean, they ate everything.
No kidding.
Yeah, I wish I had been smart and gotten a video camera and filmed it.
Oh,
what could have won $100,000 from America's Home Videos?
What kind of a car was this before
the? A 95 Toyota Tercel, and it's leased.
Oh, I thought it might have been a Mustang.
it's leased. Actually, the lease probably doesn't say anything. This is not excess mileage.
No.
This is not, you have not driven it under adverse conditions. Right. There probably is nothing in the contract that says you can't let a horse eat the car. I would just turn it in at the end of the 3 years and see if they notice.
I thought it was a pretty good story. It was pretty amazing.
That is a good story, Jenny.
Has anyone put forth an explanation? I mean, horses don't usually eat. Well, we don't know about that. Most people drive into the fields with their pickup truck. We know horses don't eat pickups.
Yeah, because my roommate has a pickup, and she goes in with it, and it's white, and they don't bother it. I think because it's green.
You think they thought it was grass?
Yeah, that's the only thing we can come up with.
Stupid damn horses.
Well, horses are not known for their intellect.
Neither are we, but we don't eat cars.
Well, that's true. Well,
jeez.
I know.
Well, I guess someplace out there has to be some kind of horse expert, which there's probably a name for a horse expert, right? What do you call a horse expert?
And, you know, I was wondering if I should approach the manufacturer about this.
Well, it would be interesting.
Well, there's going to be somebody you can sue here.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
Now you're talking.
I mean, it clearly isn't your fault. I mean, you know, if you, previous cars you've driven into the onto the fields
right.
and never had a car eaten before.
Right.
So that's one thing. So
yeah.
So
it's clearly Toyota's fault, and you got to sue them. I would make an immediate phone call to whatever sleazeball lawyers there are down there in Nashville. I'm sorry, any lawyer would be a sleazeball.
I didn't say that, Nashville lawyers.
And there must be someone who's willing to take the case because my brother is right. This does not happen to cars. I mean, horses do not eat cars. Goats eat cars, but horses don't.
Quarter horses.
Quarter horses.
Mm.
They eat quarters.
They ate quarters. That's what they call a quarter panel.
Yeah, they ate the quarter panels.
They ate the quarter panels. Yeah, I mean, this is very curious. I guess we have to find out from a veterinarian or some other horse kind of expert what makes horses eat cars. And then we'll decide who to sue, but it's got to be Toyota.
You hadn't...
good a friend was this, the one who owns these horses?
Well, there's 30 horses out in the pasture, and she had two of them boarded out there.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that there could have been something on your car that attracted them? You know, horses love salt.
Like?
No.
Tree sap, bird droppings.
Nothing, huh?
No.
Yeah, hay.
I just think it was green.
Sugar.
No, nothing.
So there's nothing you can think of that would have unduly attracted the horses.
No, because other people have their cars parked out there, and they just don't go near them. They don't bother with them.
Well, they were too busy eating yours.
So I don't park it in there anymore.
Well, I don't blame you.
Well, I mean, we will put out an all-points bulletin for anyone who knows anything about why this could have been.
That's, yeah.
And, well, you've done a public service, Ginny, by informing people that have horses and visit them in the fields not to buy a green vehicle.
but I thought you would appreciate that.
I do appreciate it. I love a mystery, and this is a mystery.
Yeah.
So most of the questions are.
All right. we'll let you know what we find out, Ginny.
Hey, thanks a lot.
And say hello to your father for me, whoever the hell he is.
I will. He's in Idaho.
He is?
Yep.
And I'm sure that we've crossed paths.
I will. I'll tell him.
Okay.
Definitely.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Don't move, because more calls and the new puzzler are coming right up.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how a new study aims to impact an underrepresented community.
My greatest hope for the Voices of Black Women study is that it will help us understand and identify culturally tailored ways to change and really eliminate the unacceptable disparities for future generations of Black women as it relates to cancer.
To learn more, go to voices.cancer.org.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at betterhelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month. This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who switch could save hundreds on car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the Department of Chastisement. Department.
I thought it was important to double up because we got a lot of mail chastising us on this one issue.
Us or you?
No, you're just as much involved in this. It has to do with, I gotta read portions of two little letters here. We listen to your advice on a fairly regular basis and usually find your wisdom to be unmatched, but in the case of the call from Justin from Washington, D.C., we feel that you led the poor man astray. Justin, as you remember, which we don't, had recently returned to the dating scene and, to paraphrase his brother's advice, was looking to replace his four-wheel drive Subaru Legacy with a Babe Magnet.
I do remember making the correction.
Your advice was to look into purchasing a Range Rover Discovery. I remember that, too.
Land Rover Discovery.
Whoa, we say. In our area of the country, Range Rovers are seen as yuppie scummobiles, not meant to ever touch anything softer than asphalt. A poor choice in our eyes. What message is our friend Justin trying to get across? Rugged outdoorsman or latte-sipping wingtipper? Woo! So then this goes on and on. Now...
Also, they assume that he would not be portraying himself as a rugged outdoorsman. Yeah. Who likes to take long walks on the beach, you know.
Exactly.
Okay, sunset.
And here's a similar one from Olivia, who doesn't want to give us her last name, but she does tell us she's from North Salem, New York. Dear brothers, no. This is powerful stuff.
Seems that way.
You got it all wrong when you were advising Justin on his babe bait dilemma. Justin, you may remember, again, is the non-lawyer, non-politician, non-doctor, non-balding, mustachioed healthcare guy from D.C. who wondered if he should give up his beloved Subaru Legacy now that he's back on the dating scene. You foolishly advised him to spend his life savings on a Land Rover Discovery. Good thing you guys are in the car business and not the dating business. As an outdoor, athletic, smart single woman in my mid-30s, the kind of, and I quote, babe.
Sounds like she's making a pitch for old Justin.
Justin says he wants to find, I believe I can speak with authority on this issue. The last thing he needs is a Land Rover, unless he's interested in an outdoor, athletic, smart woman who was primarily interested in status. Oh, tell him to save his money. The rest of us find the Land Rover a turnoff. Wow, we're learning a lot here. In fact, he's got one of the best cars he could have. The Subaru Legacy Wagon.
Understated.
The being Subaru the official is. Car of the conservation professionals across the country. And we are an outdoorsy, frequently smart, practical bunch. Let's turn instead to the most critical issue of all, which you jerks completely missed. The dog. The peculiar behavior of the dog. Leaving aside for the moment the all-important roof rack, which should be made by Thule or Yakima, and should at all times be prominently display... Oh, should prominently display one mountain bike and one kayak, no matter what kind of car he has, Justin's attention should be on the appearance and location of the dog.
Yes.
He said it was big. That's a good start. Hopefully it's a retriever of some sort. But does it ride in the front seat? There is nothing that will get Justin more attention than a big, sweet, brown-eyed dog looking mournfully out the passenger window at the babe driving in the next car. When the prospect...
Drooling onto the side of the door.
Right. When the, quote, prospect takes the opportunity to appreciate the dog and then finds her gaze returned by Justin. Hey, it won't matter how much hair he does or does not have. If that doesn't work, just give Justin my address. Sincerely, Olivia.
Well, this reminds me of a little story. Our dear sister has a girlfriend who had a dog and would go to the playground or whatever where the dogs pooped.
Yeah.
And she happened to meet a nice fellow there who also had a dog who was pooping in the playground.
Yeah.
And their dogs hit it off immediately, and so did they.
Yeah.
And they began conversing, and they met several times there, and she, of course, planned her visits in the evening to coincide with his, knowing that he was there at 6:30. She was there at 6:30 as well.
The hell with the dog's poop schedule,
and
right?
At one point, they exchanged phone numbers, and she was ecstatic. And several weeks went by after these continual evening meetings, and he finally called. And he said, "Hi, I have a cottage in New Hampshire, and I'm planning to go up for the weekend.
In my Subaru Legacy
with the kayak on the roof." And she said, yes, awaiting the imminent invitation.
He says,
"Can
I take your dog?
Would it be all right if your dog came along? He seems to get along so well with mine."
This is a true story.
This is a true story.
Who's this?
I don't know. Even if I knew, I wouldn't be at liberty to divulge for obvious reasons. But it's a true story. Anyway, with all that behind us,
I also have to thank Wade Austin for sending me an engraved little plaque that I can stick to my refrigerator. One of the famous quotes of the past several months, no matter what it is, it's going to cost you $200 if that's what it is. We should put that right up.
Well, because you've squandered at least three quarters of the show reading letters of chastisement.
Yeah, but they were good, weren't they, man?
They were wonderful. I find it necessary to go to the fallback position.
Short puzzle.
Of an incredibly brief puzzler.
Excellent.
I mean, I had planned an elaborate, complicated, convoluted,
obfuscated, deceptive,
historic, brilliant, all those things.
Yeah.
But,
and you're doing it all right now.
Here it is.
Okay, very brief.
What foreign-made car is always found in neutral? That's it. If you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or the back of a $20 bill and mail it to us. I can give no hints.
No, and you shouldn't have to.
Mail it to us at Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma, 02238. And if we choose your answer at random from among all of the correct answers and you catch us, now whether you catch us or not, we'll send you a copy of the Best of Car Talk on cassette or CD, whichever we have more of, because we're trying to get rid of these before they fill up
the basement.
It's
a million
seller,
I understand.
No, you've got a million in your cellar.
Yeah.
If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Dave from Siloam Springs, Arkansas. How you guys doing?
Good, Dave.
From what springs?
Siloam Springs.
Siloam?
Shalom. Shalom Springs.
It's very close. It's a friendly town. It's something in the Bible, I was told.
Oh.
But I haven't been able to look it up yet.
Shalom Springs is good enough for us. We
Shalom
like it.
Shalom Springs where?
Well, Arkansas.
You know, Arkansas.
There's Shalom Springs, there's Hot Springs, there's Eureka Springs. We're just springing all over
Bed
the place.
Bed Springs.
Yeah. So what's up, Dave?
Well, I got a problem with, I think it's a problem with anti-lock brakes. I've never owned a car that had anti-lock brakes before.
Yeah.
And I can't seem to get any straight talk on if I, whether I've got a problem or anti-lock brakes or...
Oh,
or
don't get my brother started. I just want to warn you, Dave, before you go too far afield here.
I just want you to know.
My brother has had a rant and rave stewing.
I'm just going to tell you this. There is a conspiracy afoot in the automotive industry today having to do with ABS. Once it's on my
radar. So go ahead, Dave.
Tell us Dave, you could be part of
is
the book.
Is this a tale of woe / and or intrigue?
Yeah.
We can call the book The Roswell Story Part 3.
You're not sucking me into an anti-lock brake gate, are you?
No.
I'm serious about this. No, tell me your story.
Don't want those plumbers coming after me. Well, last summer, I bought a program car. It was a Mitsubishi Diamante. Looked mm-hmm. like it was in real good shape, and I knew the dealer. It was my brother. And he got me
You should never do business never. With your brother.
But he got me a good deal on it, and the car looked like new, so it was pretty good.
My brother told me that, too.
Drove down to Texas to pick it up, and got the car, drove back up to here, and after about 5,000 miles, I noticed that running at high speeds, say about 90 or higher on the expressways, when you step on the brakes, the whole front end of the car just makes this horrendous noise. It vibrates. There's a bumping in it. I don't know if you guys have what we call washboard roads up in the east.
Oh. No. Our roads are smooth as a baby's butt up here.
Anyway, if I hit the brakes, it doesn't matter if I'm on a turnpike or a country road or anything. I just get this shaking like I'm going over a washboard. And my wife took it in to have it checked out. And she was told that, well, yes, those anti-lock brakes do vibrate and shake.
And they didn't bother to road test it.
I don't think they did. I don't really think they did. And I got out the owner's manual, and there's this kind of vague, they really won't say anything. Just says, it'll feel different. Be careful when you're driving.
Well,
hold
but don't
on
forget.
To the wheel.
Well, unfortunately, this does not qualify as a...
part of the conspiracy.
Part of the conspiracy theory.
The conspiracy
We had Oliver Stone on hold, but we'll let him go now because there's no movie here.
No.
What you have is warped disc rotors. We've discovered from Diamantes that we've seen in the shop that the front disc rotors tend to warp on these. Mm. Like they do on a lot of other front-wheel drive cars that have disc brakes.
Yeah.
And the remedy is either replacing the disc rotors or machining them on the vehicle to take out the warp. In fact, I had one just a couple of weeks ago. These things were warped. I couldn't believe how much they were warped. When I finally got the machine to where they were smooth again and not warped, they were
about 16th of an inch thick.
It was just an exercise, I had to end off replacing them. But they could be very slightly warped so that you wouldn't notice it at low speeds.
Yeah, the lower the speed, the better it feels.
So at 60 miles an hour, you are getting some pulsing in the pedal and some shaking in the wheel, but it's not enough to discern.
I think he said 90 miles
an hour. Well, I'm saying it's 60. I'm saying it's 60.
The road from Dallas is real straight and flat.
And boring, huh?
Yeah, boring. You could really get going up there.
Yeah, why were you slowing from 90?
Oh, this camera I pulled in front of me a little too quick.
Take it back to the dealership. Tell them to put a dial indicator on the discs, and they'll check them for what's called runout. And they'll find one or more of them is warped, and they'll machine them, and then you can slam on the brakes at 120, and you won't get any pulsing.
Ooh, are they going to be happy to hear this? The car's still under warranty.
No, I wouldn't tell them it happens at 90.
Okay.
No, I would not admit to 90.
Exactly.
Just say at highway speeds.
And I'm not sure the rotors are covered under the warranty.
I'll have to look into that.
They may not be, but it's not that much money. It's only maybe only.
I just wondered, they seem real reluctant to check it out the first time we took it in.
They're just lazy sleazeballs from the automotive industry.
I've heard you all talk about the lazy sleazeballs. I would ask now, what questions should I ask as I go in? Because they ain't going to volunteer anything.
You're on your own.
Good luck, Dave.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, you've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
I always do.
Our esteemed producer is Doug, the Subway Fugitive. Not a slave to fashion, Berman. God, we know that.
We do know that.
Our associate producer and dean of the College of Automusicology is Ken Babyface Rogers. Our engineer and assistant producer is Jennifer Travel and Leisure Loeb. I like that, Travel and Leisure Loeb. It just kind of rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, and she rolls out of here most every other day.
And our technical advisor is Mr. John Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research.
Who? John who?
Paul Murky of Murky Research.
John Lawler. That's
John,
it.
John Lawler.
Just John Lawler.
I saw a bulge under his coat. I think he's armed today. You know, he's one of these guys, if he gets to the boiling point, he might just
anything,
go off the deep end.
Anything could happen, yeah.
I mean, how many weeks in a row can you take this? John Sebastian, Mr. Height, Sweet Cheeks, Freelance, Trickle Toes, Hula Hips, Donut Breath, Gigabyte, make that two triple cheeseburgers, yeah.
He's
Lawler.
Not going to take
you do that week after week, that Gigabyte, two
sudden,
triple cheeseburgers,
boom.
Mr. Height, Sweet
the
Cheeks, Freelance, Trickle Toes, Hula Hips. How many weeks in a row can you do
he
that?
He can't take it.
Our literary critics are Ernest and Julia Hemingway. The manager of our employee refrigerator is Carmen Dating. Our director of congressional funding is Fred Knott. Our lighting supervisor is Chandelier. Our automotive registrar is Megan Model. Our director of country music.
You know, by the way,
we're not going to have an automotive registrar before long, as soon as Governor Weld takes care of that.
As soon as Wacko Weld, WW, takes care. You know, there really was a person named Chandelier? You know, Lear, of the Lear Jet, and Lear, whoever the hell he is? He actually has a daughter named Shanda.
Yes.
The truth. It's the truth.
Oh, yes. If you had a name like Lear, wouldn't you name one of your children Shanda?
I certainly would, but I'm a jerk.
You'd probably name two of them Shanda. Our director of country music is Stan Byerman. Our fleet manager is Oscar De La Rental. Our director of nutritional supplements is Rose Hips. Our wardrobe is by Natalie Attired. And, of course, our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howell is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the other turkeys in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Thanks for listening, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. If you want a copy of this week's Thinkin' Show or a copy of the Best of Car Talk cassette or CD, you can call our Shameless Commerce Division at 303-595-5905. That number again is area code 303-595-5905, and this week's show is number 46.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
Celebrating 25 years of radio excellence.
What, 25? What about the 8 years that we've been on?
Celebrating 17 years of radio excellence and 8 years of programming on a par with CBS. This is NPR National Public Radio.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Discover. Get the service you deserve with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover. Everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.